Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded May 3rd, 2023. While a generation into the communications revolution begun by the internet, governments around the world are busy devising ways to limit, throttle, or eradicate entirely the ability of the citizenry to freely share their opinions or express political dissent. And Canada is no exception. Last week, Bill C-11 received ratification from the Senate, despite the government rejecting crucial amendment proposals put forward by that body. Rosa Adario is a Canadian telecommunications technology researcher. She's currently communications manager at Open Media, a, quote, community-driven organization working to keep the internet open, affordable, and surveillance-free. Rosa Adario in the first half. And the current conflict in Ukraine is proving to be the engine of a technological acceleration in both the methods and means of prosecuting war. Fortunately, those working for peace are too engaging new strategies and technologies to help bring the insanity of this and the next war to a halt. Kathy Kelly is a longtime peace and justice activist, essayist, author, and recipient of numerous awards for her peace service, including multiple nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize. These days, she's serving as board president at World Beyond War, where, among other things, she's busy coordinating the November 2023 Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal. Kathy's many articles appear at sites across the web, including worldbeyondwar.org, where I found her recent piece, To End All Wars, Close All Bases. Kathy Kelly and World Beyond War's latest tech tools in the struggle to end the madness in the second half. But first, Rosa Adario and what Bill C-11 portends for Canadians' freedom to read, write, and speak online. Well, welcome to the program, Rosa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Rosa, can we begin with a little history on BC11's, quote, tumultuous journey, as the CBC's Richard Raycraft describes it, to enactment?
Yes, definitely. So Bill C11 was initially proposed as Bill C10, and that was before our most recent election. And so it died on the floor before the election and then was resurrected as Bill C11. And so it has been, you know, ongoing for about a little over a year. And what we're looking at today is pretty much a bill that resembles almost exactly what was initially proposed.
And C10 wasn't accepted happily either, though. As I recall, this is going back a ways, but it was a pretty bumpy ride, and the government calling the election was just a happenstance that it wasn't going to have an easy time either in that form. And then C11, they didn't seem to have changed very much.
No, you're right in that much of what was contained in Bill C10 carries over until Bill C11. And we know that, you know, it has had a pretty rocky journey to where it is now, which is having passed the Senate, receiving royal assent, and then we are, you know, awaiting law.
Yeah, so it was a little bit of a tweak on C10. Now we're on to C11. The king has said it's okay, whoever is sitting on the throne until the king does. Which is another issue altogether. Now, you guys say, yeah, well, the core issues here haven't been addressed, though. C-11 has skipped over some pretty major concerns of a lot of people, including Open Media. Do you want to go over some of these core concerns?
The Bill C-11 that we have today is as broken as when it was introduced. So our main concerns are with the CRTC gaining regulatory control over video and audio content on the internet, similar to the way that they regulate our radio and TV content. And the way that Bill C-11 will do so is by relying on our definitions of Canadian content, which are, we call CanCon definitions. As it sits now, the CanCon definitions have not been updated since the 1980s, and they were made for broadcasting. So, you know, our traditional broadcast media would have been, you're listening to the radio, you're watching TV. If you don't like what you're watching or listening to, you have two options. You can change the channel or you can turn it off. We know now that that's not how the internet works, you know, and there's such a wealth of options out there. And our Canadian creators are, you know, generating such amazing content, but this bill will not benefit them in the way that it is described. So our main concerns are for, you know, Canadian creators and their ability to actually benefit from Bill C-11 and the content of everyday users, our feeds, what our feeds will look like, and how our content that we're generating may be regulated.
Yeah, well, the key word here to me, and I'm old enough to remember when CanCon was introduced way back in the 80s, and I was at college in radio, and I remember none of us were pleased that we were disc jockeys in those days, and we weren't pleased with the idea that somebody would be dictating what music we could play and that it had to be Canadian, and we grumbled quite a bit about it. Do you think that the original CanCon strictures have been effective and have fulfilled the role that they had hoped to?
I think what's important to note is that if all this bill did was promote Canadian content and really boost Canadian content creators to the fore, we wouldn't have a problem with it. There's nothing wrong with allocating revenue to Canadian content creation. The problem here is that it should be open to all Canadian creators. And as it sits, the bill will largely benefit those who understand and have historically operated within the legacy CanCon system. So kind of similar to what you're describing, people who have understood CanCon for a long time, legacy media companies like CBC, our Canadian Content Creators National Film Board, et cetera, will understand and operate and succeed under the CanCon definition. But our new sort of creators that have emerged, our online creators, our TikTokers, our YouTubers, our podcasters, are the ones who are really going to suffer here.
I noticed in you guys' release, you term audio visual production, but you don't specify something like radio. Can I just turn this off now because I'm just doing audio? Or does this include programs like the one you're speaking to me on today? Because this will be uploaded online and go to Spotify and other places too, some places that I don't even know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so Spotify and those online uploaded pieces of material are really where the concern is. It's really what you've identified is, you are operating in a traditional radio format. When you upload that content onto the internet, that's really where you'll see the impact of Bill C-11. So you may see that the content that you're posting is receiving less success because it's not reaching the audience that you want it to, because the discoverability mechanisms have changed to meet the CanCon requirements. So things like, Spotify algorithms and podcasts and TikToks and YouTube videos and independent platforms like BritBox and Twitch, et cetera, are really where we're going to see a lot of this change come.
Well, now, like I said, I remember the origins of this, which means that by definition, I'm a pretty old guy and I only understood about half of what you just said. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people listening that even understood even less of that. But before we get to the discoverability, because I think that's a really important issue, I just want to cover one more thing. And just so that people realize that the CRTC was created to protect broadcasting, to control broadcasting in this country. And broadcasting meant the airwaves because, the science of it means there's only so much bandwidth in there. And the government decided at the time, and other governments too, that that should be a common that was owned by the people, which meant, as it turns out, it was owned by the government and they would control and regulate it. Now they're applying the same definition online, but this isn't broadcast at all. The internet isn't a part of the commons, and it's not limited in the spectrum that can limit what programs can be featured on it either. And yet the CRTC is sort of barging in and saying, well, this is the same as broadcasting when it isn't.
Yeah, exactly. It's what you've just said. We know that the internet operates entirely differently from broadcasting, largely because we have so many options, so many choices, and we're not limited to a single channel that we're being fed. So, the internet has really opened up so many different types of content that we can consume. And treating the internet like broadcasting under broadcasting era legislation that hasn't been updated in over 40 years just really doesn't make sense.
The discoverability part. Now, this is a concern, and I can't say that I quite understand it. Now, we all know, well, most of us know that are in producing online. We know about trying to compete in this blizzard of information, where getting found is more than 90%, it seems, of the battle. And this discoverability clause that's been inserted into Bill C-11, it does that mean that as a producer, I have to make sure that people discover me as Canadian, or that the references within my material refer to Canadian producers, or what's that mean?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and kind of what it, the crux of what this comes down to for content creators. So when we talk about discoverability, we talk about your opportunity as a creator to be found by audiences, for your followers to find you, for new communities to find you. And if in this case, the government is promoting CanCon, Canadian content, we are not sure that all online content creators are going to be able to benefit from that system. So let's say an independent TikToker isn't able to register for CanCon requirements because there are these outdated requirements that meet broadcasting era standards. They will not necessarily qualify as, quote, CanCon, and will not benefit from the CanCon system either promotionally or financially. So even though a Canadian content creator is putting content out on the internet, they're Canadian, they're, you know, making content about Canada from Canada, they may see their content downranked in favor of that certified CanCon, which is that legacy media that we're talking about.
Yeah, this is crazy because, you know, I'm a Canadian, I'm talking to Canadians, I'm talking about Canadian issues, not always, but, you know, most of the time. And yet somehow I may not fill the quota system, the point system that was initiated back in the 80s, where, and it was always quite complicated, where you had, well, is it a Canadian artist? If it's a song, was it produced by a Canadian record company? The nationality was even like Buffy St. Marie. Is she Canadian? Is Neil Young Canadian, really? I mean, you know, and it goes on and on, and into film as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had run as an organization a quiz a little while back, kind of highlighting the issues with CanCon. You know, we would put up two pieces of content, you know, a documentary about the Toronto Maple Leafs and then a documentary called Gotta Love Trump. Which one of these qualifies as CanCon? In the end, it was, you know, Gotta Love Trump because of these outdated CanCon requirements that have such stringent rules about what CanCon means. And so in practice, we know that CanCon requirements don't actually mean Canadian content that's produced in Canada. It means something entirely different. And that's really where we're going to see our Canadian content creators suffer because, you know, if we can't figure out what CanCon means, how can we expect those creators to figure out what CanCon means? And even though we might see these CanCon requirements being updated, it makes absolutely no sense to base a bill on a piece of legislation that is so outdated that it won't benefit the people it's meant to benefit.
Well, and the onus on the producers, I mean, the SEO industry, the search engine optimization, created a whole industry of so-called professionals. You know, we can debate how effective that is, really. But their whole idea was to make your website and your productions easy to find on the internet. I mean, it required people that knew quite a lot more than you did, maybe, as a producer. But this goes even beyond that, it seems. The second element of this discoverability stricture in this is the search results. Now, I don't quite understand what they mean by the search results, but it's important to know because as Open Media notes, the mandatory quota of CanCon, if that isn't met within the search results even, then you're liable to be fined by the CRTC. What is search results and the mandatory quota about in that regard?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, let's say I am on YouTube and I am searching for a video on how to fix my dryer. I don't particularly care if the content that I'm seeing is a Canadian dryer. I just want the best video that's going to help me. And so that's really what the problem will be, is that, you know, whatever you're searching for, whatever you're looking for, you're going to see that Canadian content, the type that qualifies as, quote, CanCon, above anything else, which is going to hurt the content that our online creators are making. So as a user, our search results and our feeds are going to get worse. They're going to get less tailored to what we want to see. It will promote that official CanCon while pushing other results further down, which we know will hurt those content creators because they won't be able to, you know, they won't be getting the views, they won't be getting the clicks, they won't be getting the same ad revenue if their content isn't, you know, qualified as, quote, CanCon. You also brought up a really interesting, these platforms may end up getting fined. It's very true that, you know, we could see our platforms receiving penalties for not meeting these CanCon requirements. And for smaller or independent platforms who, you know, are not able to meet these stringent the stringent legislation in Canada, they may decide to pull out of the Canadian market altogether because their revenue might not be worth it. It might not be worth it to go through, jump through all these hoops and build these new algorithms for what could potentially be a small part of their audience.
Well, for me, I could say that would be an easy decision. I could just get a server in Denmark. I know people over there. And instead of having it hosted, my show hosted from Canada, just host it from Denmark. Would that mean that I wouldn't be Canadian anymore, but I wouldn't have to dance to anybody's tune until Denmark adopts the same thing?
Yeah, exactly. So what you've just raised is a big concern, is that what if other countries follow suit? What if there are other, you know, governments that decide that this is the way to go? What also is a concern is there are a lot of people in Canada who really identify with communities that are not exclusively Canadian. There are people who, you know, want to see content from the country that they came from, or from, you know, where their family is from. And pushing CanCon in front of them isn't going to make them want to see that anymore. It's just going to make it harder for them to find what they're actually looking for. And there's a real risk of isolation of those smaller, you know, diasporic or diverse communities in Canada not being able to reach the communities that they've historically relied on.
Well, when you say other countries may, is Canada the first to adopt this kind of legislation, or are we following the example of some other country?
No, this Canada is definitely really may not potentially be the first to attempt to create some kind of like streaming legislation, but the way in which Canada has gone about this, the way in which this regulation will impact and harm creators and users is unprecedented on the global stage.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Rosa Addario. Rosa is a Canadian telecommunications technology researcher, currently communications manager at Open Media. They are a community-driven organization working to keep the internet open, affordable, and surveillance-free. You guys have been at it here in Canada for a long time, Rosa, and you've been doing a lot of work, and I can see that your work is shifting over time as things become the levels of complexity in this whole industry and sphere become more and more intertwined and tangled.
Yeah, you know, it has been one of our biggest pieces of work in the last year to make sure that we are following this bill closely, that we are representing the needs of people in Canada, and that we're giving our community an outlet to respond to the government, to have their voice heard, to ensure that, you know, this legislation is built upon what people in Canada really want and really need. You know, we sent over 100,000 messages to the government from our community members who said, you know, leave my posts alone, leave my feeds alone, don't, you know, regulate user-generated content. And yet today what we're looking at is a bill that has not been fixed to exclude user-generated content or discoverability mechanisms.
Yeah. Well, the Canadian Media Fund, the CMF, their headline says they're celebrating the passage of BC-11, the Online Streaming Act. They think it's a great idea. It opens up, quote, a wealth of new possibilities to strengthen the future of Canadian storytelling. You guys don't see it quite that way.
No, I mean, the CMF operates in a two-sided relationship with CanCon. So content creators will benefit if they are able to meet these rigid CanCon criteria, and for the legacy media outlets who have a relationship with both CanCon and the Canadian Media Fund. So these legacy outlets pay into the Canadian Media Fund and they can pull money out of it. Expanding those obligations means that online platforms will pay into the media fund, but will not be able to pull money out of it to support the production of Canadian content.
So then is this just a way of, if I'm to be cynical, of narrowing the scope of content creators and creating a trough run by the government to favor the people producing the kind of things they like to see?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because we know that we have amazing creators here in Canada, and it does not just fall under the people who are making the videos. Our, you know, cultural production industry employs tens of thousands of people a year, and we are generating millions and millions of dollars of revenue from producing that content. So it really speaks to how unfair and how one-sided this bill is if the people who are generating all that content, who are promoting Canadian content on a global stage, are not able to benefit from this law that is meant to benefit them.
Well, now there is, it says though that there are people that are specifically excluded from what is these requirements, but it's a little vague as to just who and actually where this legislation's going to go. It says that they're waiting for policy direction, and yet, you know, it's like, yeah, sure, later you'll give me millions, but right now, what are you proposing? What about this idea of policy direction that the government says is coming down the line? So for people like Open Media, just don't worry too much about this. We'll sort out the bumpy bits, is what it sounds like to me.
Right. I mean, really, when has Just Trust Us from our government ever inspired confidence? It's true that, you know, our heritage minister, who is head of this bill, has said, don't worry, user-generated content will not be regulated, but we really can't rely on those promises. And we're really wanting them to be, those protections to be entrenched in law. So our legal protection against CRTC regulation was the best case scenario. And that policy direction that you're speaking of is kind of the next opportunity to enshrine those protections. So the policy direction will be issued from the Heritage Minister, and it will guide the CRTC on how Minister Rodriguez wants them to interpret Bill C-11. So we need to ensure that the policy direction and the CRTC's interpretation of the bill protect user-generated content, and that discoverability mechanisms should be respectful of our choices and not apply to all content on every platform.
The Minister of Canadian Heritage, that's Pablo Rodriguez, he's the person behind or the face of all this. And he says, well, this is just to make big companies, like the way it's put forward is this is to make companies like Netflix and Spotify pay what they say is, quote, their fair share in supporting Canadian artists, just like the traditional broadcasters do. I would imagine most Canadians seeing that would think, yeah, why shouldn't they pay their fair share? Even though it's not broadcasting, it's not into the realm, into the public ownership realm of bandwidth of broadcasting, but online, as we said before. And what it does, it seems, is limit the amount of information Canadians are going to be able to get access to easily.
Right. I mean, you know, as we've said, there's nothing wrong with allocating funds or content towards supporting Canadian creators. But if those creators aren't actually going to be able to benefit from the system, and it is going to be largely legacy media that is going to benefit, it's really a bill that is not built for Canadian content creators. The other issue with this kind of policy direction is that a policy direction is not binding in law. So a future government can change their mind and issue a completely different direction for the CRTC to fully regulate our content as broadcasting, and our members of parliament wouldn't be able to do anything to stop it because it is not enshrined in legislation.
Well, the Senate, one of the amendments that the Senate put forward and the House did accept in this was a requirement that the CRTC hold public consultation on how it's going to use these newly minted regulatory powers. Does that not reassure?
Yeah, so the CRTC has opened their consultation, but there's a real concern here, or they've announced their consultation, sorry. There's a real concern about whether they're going to be able to do this job. The CRTC has been rightly criticized in recent years for making decisions that took a lot longer than was reasonable to make straightforward policy moves. So the idea that the CRTC will all of a sudden be able to make intelligent and timely decisions about thousands of streaming platforms with millions of pieces of content seems improbable.
Well, the opposition in Parliament is not happy about this either. And the Conservatives say that this is an attack on freedom of expression, saying, quote, under this archaic system of censorship, government gatekeepers will now have the power to control which videos, posts, and other content Canadians can see online. A lot of this is sort of couched in the creative area, but what about in political content and news content? We've seen in this country already the censorship of foreign news outlets like RT. What about the political censorship threat that C-11 may pose?
Yeah. So, you know, the way that we've really thought about this is Bill C-11 doesn't necessarily affect your ability to speak, but it affects your ability to be heard. So it is not necessarily that you won't be able to say or publish the content that you want online, but it may not be reaching the audiences and the people that it historically has. So that's really the problem, is that it's not, oh, you can't say things anymore. What you can put out onto TikTok, YouTube, whatever is different. Those requirements are the same, but the discoverability mechanisms make it so that that audience is not exactly, you know, who wants to see the content. And if, like anyone, if you were being shoved a bunch of content in front of your face that you didn't want to see, you would rightfully not want to engage with that. You would be upset, you would be annoyed, and it would make you not want to interact with whatever is being pushed in front of your face. So even those that benefit from CanCon, that meet those CanCon requirements, also are going to see some pushback on this, because they're going to be pushed to the top of the feeds of people who didn't ask to see it.
Well, you've got over at openmedia.org what's wrong with BC? What's wrong with Bill C-11? It's a fact sheet put up by your colleague Ramneet Bular, and that I suggest everyone go and see at great haste. Openmedia.org. You've got a lot of. This isn't your only campaign. Do you want to talk a little bit, Rosa, about some of the other campaigns Open Media is undertaking right now?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, as an organization, our mandate is to fight to keep the internet affordable, accessible, and surveillance free. So a lot of our work centers around privacy legislation. A lot of our work centers around access to, you know, affordable internet. We know that we pay some of the highest rates in the world for connectivity, and we're actively fighting to make sure that people in Canada can, you know, gain those the right to connectivity that everyone should have. We know that internet at this point is basically a human right, and yet people are paying through the nose in Canada for basic connectivity. So these are some of the issues that we are really passionate about.
Well, and you can go and take the, can you tell us if this is CanCon or can't quiz? That's pretty good over there. And maybe it'll help clarify, because it does get pretty weedy and complicated when you start getting into what is Canadian and what isn't Canadian, according to whom. And I'm looking at some of the film posters, and it looks like a fun game to play. And if you can decide what's what, then you're a better person than I am. Thanks a lot, Rosa Dario, for coming on and talking a little bit about what's going on today, eh?
Thank you so much for having me.
My great pleasure. And I want everyone else to stick around. I'm going to speak with Kathy Kelly after the break, and we're going to talk about what she's doing over there in her new seat with World Beyond War. Thanks again, Rosa.
Thanks so much.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the current conflict in Ukraine is proving to be the engine of a technological acceleration in both the methods and means of prosecuting war. Fortunately, those working for peace are too engaging new strategies and technologies to help bring the insanity of this and the next war to a halt. Kathy Kelly is a longtime peace and justice activist, essayist, author, and recipient of numerous awards for her peace service, including multiple nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize. These days, she's serving as board president at World Beyond War, where, among other things, she's busy coordinating the November 2023 Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal. Kathy's many articles appear at sites across the web, including worldbeyondwar.org, where I found her recent piece, To End All Wars, Close All Bases. Welcome back to the program, Kathy.
Well, thank you, Chris. Good to be with you.
Well, Kathy, now your article, To End All Wars, Close All Bases, begins with Mohammed Abunahel's work featured at World Beyond War. What's Mohammed's story?
Well, it's so interesting. Mohammed grew up in Gaza, and this meant that in his young life was punctuated constantly by onslaughts, military onslaughts, when the Israeli occupation forces would aerially bombard Gaza. And he was living in what's sometimes called the world's largest open-air prison, because it's very difficult to